said, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. My next guest is State Representative Supreme Moore Omukunde. Good morning, dear brother. How are you?
I'm really ecstatic to be here. I've been trying to get on with you for a while now, so I'm glad to be here this morning.
Yeah, man, I'm really glad to have you on. For those who don't know, you are the son of Congresswoman Gwen Moore.
Yes, I am. Last time I checked.
but let me, you just heard, did you just hear the commercial about the flat tax?
Yes, I did.
So, you know, here's the deal. For all of the people who are so misguided and think that Tim, I'm a businessman, Michaels, as wealthy as he is somehow going to, you know, take the interests of the average Joe into consideration if he becomes the governor. I mean, I don't understand, Supreme, how average people think that by putting the wealthiest people amongst us in political office, that those people are somehow, and especially Republicans, and that those people are somehow going to look out for you and your best interests. We've seen this story before, right?
Right.
You know, I mean, listen, you're in Madison.
Yes, sir.
You guys have not been in session since March.
Right.
You know, you won't be back in session until January. And it's not because you guys haven't wanted to be in session, didn't think that there was any reason for you to be in session. Let's talk about why. You guys have not been in session since March. Hey, in a representative government.
Yes, sir. Well, here's the biggest thing. The thing is that there are a lot of us who want to get things done.
I know.
However, there are others of us who want to move things about as they see fit. Governor Evers has tried to get us back in session a few times. However, what happens is, and we gavel in and we gavel out. You know, the governor calls for a special session dealing with reproductive justice, or how are we going to deal with for folks who don't know, we have a $5.4 billion surplus. How are we going to start to plan to spend those dollars? What is it going to go to? Is it going to go to education? Is it going to go to helping us with our violence prevention programs in local areas, et cetera? And people, we just gavel in and gavel out. It's like 5 seconds. Remember the first time it happened, I was like, that's it? It's not even a debate or anything? So we've tried to be in session. But there are people who say, well, the business is done. And now we're going to campaign.
let me ask you, Representative Omukunde. So I hear people say that they're really good Republicans, right? I mean, that you got a lot of colleagues that are really good people. And do you find that to be true?
Well, I think that there are a lot of good people on a personal level. However, when it comes to the political piece, people go into their corners and they fall into their different categories. And unfortunately, the other party, they are using a lot of dog whistles. They have a playbook of lies, fear, and anger that they use every election cycle, and they're using them right now. And so when you get people behind closed doors, you may have a degree of civility. However, out in public, it's not that way. They typically fall in line. But this time, I think that the people of Wisconsin and the voters in Wisconsin are going to be focused on the issues that pertain to them and not the language that that other party uses to rile up his base.
So I want you to explain to the listening audience who don't understand that we have a legislature that will not give the cities an opportunity, a city like Milwaukee, man, mm-hmm. to raise a 1 cent sales tax to make it possible for our city to pay its bills. And as we watch the dwindling resources that the economic engine of this state struggles with, at the same time, a legislature that says you need to have more police officers, and right. you guys won't bring in more police, and we don't like the way you spend your money. You shouldn't be get rid of the trolley, making all of these demands mm-hmm. to the cities who are struggling economically to even keep their cities going. How is it possible that we have people in the legislature who would rather see the cities fail when they're sitting on $5.5 billion, man? Explain that to me.
Well, I would need them to explain it to me as well. I think that the biggest thing is that, and I need folks to understand, in this next election, that the very future of our city and cities. Our county and our state is at stake. The cities, county, state is all at stake. If you look at whether it be our economy, women's rights, or anything else, we get a right to choose who's going to be our who's going to have that power. In the state legislature, they've decided that any local sales tax that anyone would garner would have to get permission from the state to do so. And they're saying we don't want to give you that permission. When I was on the county board, we did the fair deal for Milwaukee County, where we wanted to do some things to lower property taxes and also get some infrastructure dollars as well. And we had to go through all of these hoops and all of these conversations had to be had. And from my perspective, what I see a lot of is that there is this thing about Milwaukee where if we need someone to blame, we're going to point towards Milwaukee. Or if we need a scapegoat, we're going to point towards cities like Milwaukee. When Milwaukee is lifting up the entire state, and we do well for the entire state. If you look at the amount of taxes that we pay to the state, we pay about $400 million more in taxes Milwaukee County does than we did like 10 years ago. And so we need to make sure that we are having our voices heard, and we're saying, look, we need to make sure we can get some of that back. Shared revenue, we can get, you know, we can look at how we deal with our own, keeping some of our dollars so we can use it for infrastructure. We can use it for roads. We can use it for jobs. We can use it to bring ourselves into the new generation and talk about climate justice and preventing climate change. We can use it to pay some of our bills, et cetera.
Well,
and
pensions, so, to pay the pension obligations.
Yes, sir. Because the pension obligations are going to balloon in the next couple of years. So, absolutely.
So let me, again, what is their rationale for saying no to a 1 cent sales tax that does not affect them whatsoever? One iota.
Well, I think from my personal perspective, is we want you to send more of your money here. When you go back to when Scott Walker said it's cheaper to keep them, he was talking about the Milwaukee Bucks. Of course he wanted to keep the Milwaukee Bucks. When you look at the TV deals that the NBA has, then they're exploding. Contracts are larger, and they wanted to send that money to Madison. And also, if many people don't know this, but anytime LeBron James or Steph Curry or James Harden or any of them come to play the Bucks, they have to pay Wisconsin income taxes because they worked here. And so that money all goes to Madison. And anytime you have Summerfest and Brewers games and different events downtown, they get to collect those taxes and they're primarily sent to Madison. And so, yeah, they want to keep those dollars, and they want to get more of them so they can send them elsewhere and keep them in their coffers.
But yes, again, sir. We just talked about mm-hmm. there's a $5.5 billion surplus. How much more money right. do they need?
They probably want more than that. And the thing about the surplus is those dollars can go to education. Those dollars can go to, like I said, preventing violence in cities. Those dollars can go to funds that would help us reduce our greenhouse gas emissions and help us achieve climate justice. But a lot of people say, oh, we want to hoard the money, we want to keep the money. If there was ever a rainy day, it's right now. And so we need to be talking about how these dollars can best be spent and assist places like the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County that are in dire need.
So hang on. Let's go to Bill from McCunnum Walk. Hey, good morning, Bill. How you doing? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Well, again, oh boy, you guys are right, spot on. First of all, we don't need Michaels. And here's why we don't need Michaels. The last Republican governor gutted the DNR, gutted our education system, gutted state unions. He just was hellacious on this state. So we would even consider another Republican governor after that damage. But you guys are touching on a point, Earl, you leaned on it before you went to the news break. The youth, the young people are the answer. A friend of mine who is a former Republican, now a card-carrying Democrat, said when young people get into office or get at the voting age, they're going to take a chainsaw to this craziness that we tolerate called the Republican Party. Not all of them. There's Liz Cheney. There's a few. But the majority of them, 345 candidates in the upcoming election are election deniers. Do we want those people running our state? Our state legislature gavels in and gavels out and does not work. They refuse to work. And we tolerate all this? I'll tell you what, there's a candidate coming that's not going to tolerate it. You're mentioning about the sales tax that Milwaukee collects. Why don't we just stand on a principle like the Republicans would and say, look, we're not paying that tax. That tax is going to us. You sue us in court. Hey, you get us to court because that's the kind of stuff they do to us.
Hey,
yes,
yo,
sir.
Thank you very much for the call, man. We got to go to a break. Representative Omokunde, hang on. We'll be right back. You're tuning into the Earl Ingram Show.
Hello? Hey, Greg. Hey, I can't talk.
Try to see things my way. Do I have to keep on talking till I can go on? While you see it your way, run the risk of knowing that soon be gone. We can work it out. We can work it out. Think of what you're saying. You can get it wrong and still think that it's alright. Think of what I'm saying. We can work it out and get it straight or say goodnight. We can work it out. We can work it out.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My man, Connor. On the line, State Representative Supreme Moore Omokunde. And, you know, brother, here's kind of what I want people to understand. Governor Evers has vetoed 126 pieces of legislation from Republicans in the past 2 years. Now, people may say, okay, so what did he veto? And why did he veto it? And Republicans are up in arms. This is the reason they want to see him banished, because he's basically vetoed these kinds of bills that Republicans have offered. Here's one, Bill 629. No, let me go to this one. Let's go to Bill 608. The bill allows students that participate in special needs scholarship programs in the previous year to meet the prior year's attendance requirement to participate in the Wisconsin Parental Choice Program or the Racine Parental Choice Program. The bill additionally extends the window of time when students may transfer applications across choice programs and allows applications for the Milwaukee Parental Choice Program or Racine Parental Choice Program to transfer to the Wisconsin Parental Choice Program if certain conditions are met. Finally, as drafted last year, the bill opens a window in November 2021, opened a window in November 2021 to allow applicants submitted prior applications submitted prior to 2021 to transfer between choice programs. Here's why he vetoed it. I'm vetoing the bill in this in its entirety. I object to complicating the movement of students desperate manner and have different requirements. Funding for parental choice programs remain convoluted and inconsistent across programs. Currently, new students enrolling in private schools and Wisconsin Parental Choice Program and Racine Parental Choice Programs are effectively entirely funded by their resident schools, districts' property taxes through a revenue limit adjusted, but students enrolling in private schools in the Milwaukee Parental Choice Program are funded almost entirely by the state. Additionally, the bill continues untimely and obsolete provisions. So what I'm saying and what the governor is saying, Representative Omakunde, is it's what's in the details of these bills that they're trying to slip in. And so unless you read the bills, you don't have any idea. So Republicans run around and say the governor, you know, has vetoed 126 of our bills. But when you get into the details, you realize that the bills are going to hurt people who don't even know that this, and the majority of the people who don't even know these things are coming. Did I lose him?
Oh, am I here? Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, yeah, there are so many bills that would have fell through the legislature had it not been for Governor Evers and his veto power. You had bills that would have made it easier for teenagers to bring firearms on the school grounds and keep in their cars. He vetoed it. It prevents students from being in a situation where they could get a gun as a gift and bring it to school, and they could potentially use it if they were upset, much like Ethan Crumbley did in Michigan. There were attacks on trans children. There were threats to reduce your funding in your school if you talked a certain kind of history, or we're having a reduction in state aid if you chose to teach that critical race theory stuff. And so many people call it critical race theory, but it's just teaching of certain history that would make young white men in particular uncomfortable. And if we found out that you were teaching that, there was a bill that said we could reduce your state aid and your state funding for your school. And that's just to name a few. There are so many other ones that would have failed through had it not been for Governor.
Well, here's another one.
Yes, sir.
Here's another one. Senate Bill 570. This bill would, with certain exceptions, limit the civil liability of firearms, mm-hmm. Accessory and ammunition manufacturers, distributors, importers, trade associations, sellers, and dealers. Governor Evers, I'm vetoing this bill in its entirety because I object to creating more immunities for the gun industry under the Federal Protection of Lawful Commerce in Arms Act. The gun industry already enjoys the benefit of broad immunity that virtually no other industry receives in federal and state courts. This bill would double down on those privileges and create an unprecedented punitive fee-shifting mechanism in Wisconsin. I believe the presumption should be an open courthouse door to anyone seeking justice and an honest debate of law of the land. And on and on and on. People need to understand what Governor Evers has done as a stopgap to stop some of these crazy bills that Republicans continue to push. Got to go to a break. On the line, yes, State Rep Supreme Moore Omokunde. Your phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
Let me take you higher than herbalist climbing treetops. This is not rap, my nigga, this more like bebop. Classic Freddie Hubbard, these words are uttered like dairy cattle, making sure the rain lasts forever. I'm sleepless.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You tune into the Earl Ingram Show. My guest is State Representative Supreme Moore Omokunde. You know, let's talk a little bit. You know, you were a county supervisor, and
yes, sir.
And you ran for state representative. So, what have you garnered? What have you gained? What have you learned about the inner workings of state government as opposed to county government? And are you frustrated at all with what you've been able to either accomplish or not accomplish thus far?
Well, it's definitely a distinction between county government and state government. The old adage goes is that the county is an arm of the state government. And when you're working with nonpartisan versus partisan politics, there's a distinction there. However, there are many folks who don't know this. However, my mother ran for assembly in 1988. I was 8, 9 years old, knocking on doors with her, and so much of it, I already knew what I was going into. I knew that I wanted to be in the fight. The things that I cared about, like climate justice, like development without displacement, et cetera, they didn't have a county answer. That answer was at the state. So I knew I wanted to go there and be a part of that mix. It does get frustrating at times, especially when you have a party who wants to remove the civility from the politics. And it's really important that we maintain that civility. So it can get frustrating, but some of it is what I expected. But I'm still doing great work, I think, in Madison. I've been mostly campaigning for my reelection, as well as helping other people, some great other folks like Luann Bird on the south side in the Greenfield area, folks like Mandela Barnes and Governor Tony Evers and Jeff Smith and other people like that. And I've also taken some of my work from the county board to the state. When I was on the county board, we created the City-County Task Force on Climate and Economic Equity with then Common Council President Ashanti Hamilton. And Senator Chris Larson and I introducing a climate and jobs bill after the election. And again, we have a party that doesn't even believe in climate change, but we see the effects of it every day, like excessively stronger hurricanes in the south. And we get colder winters in Wisconsin due to regional shifts, things like El Nino, et cetera. And we get those storms that we got last summer in the state of Wisconsin. And we can do the work to send us in the other direction, as well as create economic opportunity in communities where it has been lost, like the A.O. Smiths and the Adelphi's of the world that we used to have. And to that effort, we're actually hosting a town hall meeting tonight, October 27th, from 6 to 8 p.m. We have a virtual option and we have an in-person option. And folks who are interested in joining us, they can definitely go to my Instagram page. It's at rep_SMO, or they can go to my Facebook page, State Representative Supreme Moore Omokunde, and they can find out more information on how to register that so they can be with us tonight. So we've done that, and we've done a number of different things. And I serve on 4 committees, energy and utilities, the regulatory licensing reform or the licensing committee, mental health and transportation. So I've been able to be a part of some good stuff and a part of some good work.
Let me ask you, man.
Yes, sir.
When we talk about committees like mental health should be no problem whatsoever Republicans, there should be not one Republican opposed to doing anything with mental health, because mental health is an issue that supersedes race, denomination, certainly political, beliefs, well-to-do, poor. When you talk about mental health issues, is that working on the state level, or are there people who are opposed to even? And we see that the increase in and what stress does to create mental health issues for people. How are the conservatives or Republicans dealing with that?
Well, things get politicized, unfortunately.
Even in mental health?
Yes, absolutely. Even in mental health, things get politicized. There are those who don't want to talk about the effects of mental health on things like those who would find themselves in our prisons.
Right.
They think, oh, you came up in the wrong community, or you didn't have a father, et cetera. And much of that may be true. However, we have to realize that more than half of the people who end up in our prisons have an undiagnosed mental health challenge.
Which is absolutely shameful. That a society such as ours dismisses mental health issues. You know what I mean?
Right.
If people could help their situation, and people don't choose to have mental health issues, right? I mean, who in their right mind would say, "Hey, I want to be mentally ill"? It is out of the realm of anybody's ability to control. So why would there be people willing to say, "Hey, let's lock up the people with mental illness"?
Right. So people, you know, there's money in locking people up, unfortunately.
Right.
And also, when we talk about mental health, it's like, let's have a bill where you can take your firearm to the range and have them store it for you if you're having any mental health episodes, and therefore we'll be bolstering some money to these ranges.
Wait a minute.
Yes, sir.
Repeat that again.
There was a bill in the mental health committee that said, if you are having some mental health challenges, we want to be able to allow you to take your weapon to a gun range and have them store it for you so that you are not doing harm to yourself, which on its face is great and is a good thing. However, then we are funneling and using state dollars to support these private businesses in order to store these firearms.
See, man, I could never do your job. You know, man, I would just blow a gasket that people would be, you know, so out of touch with reality, and that they would be so trifling that they would come up with that as opposed to addressing the mental illness.
Right.
You know, I mean, come on, man.
Right. So I do these sessions. It's called You Need Therapy. And, you know, especially in the Black community, oftentimes if somebody is not doing something you want them to do, people will yell or retort, oh, you need therapy. You need therapy. And however, many of us do need some form of therapy or some form of mental wellness check. And sometimes it's not therapy. Sometimes it's just having a conversation, learning how to journal, doing whatever it is you do. So I have this session called You Need Therapy, and I've done it virtually for the most part, but we're going to start doing it live in the next year, where we bring healthcare professionals in and licensed practitioners and counselors in, and we talk about mental health amongst young people, amongst women, amongst Black and brown folks, amongst other groups of folks. And we talk about how we address things and put it at the forefront of our conversation when we're talking about how we operate on a day-to-day basis. Because we really need to have that conversation. How is something that happened to you 30-plus years ago, how is that affecting you to this day? I remember, you know, a couple weeks ago, they were talking about, you know, the whole Jeffrey Dahmer series on Netflix came out, and people were like, yeah, I'm going to watch it. I lived three blocks away from there, and I walked by that place every day on my way to the McDonald's that's up there, on my way to summer school. And it took me 20 years to realize how traumatic that whole episode was for somebody who lived in that neighborhood. We have to talk about things that we don't think is even a problem, and we have to focus on our mental health and how that is prohibiting us from doing certain things in our life. And we're not having that conversation in that committee, unfortunately.
So you know, the children who live in the kinds of conditions that some live in rural areas, that we know some live in central cities, the inherent dangers and lack of adequate food and, you know, leaded water and living in war zones and, you know, you name it, all of those things that impact and affect the development of a human being. Are you telling me that all those things, they don't give much conversation to or about when those kinds of things are brought up that help bring on the onset of mental illness? That discussion is not one that's readily talked about on the committee or on the panel at the state level? I mean, people just dismiss all of those things?
Well, I haven't, in this past session, we haven't had much dialogue about that. However, we have had some dialogue about the fact that we need to get young people back in school in the middle of a pandemic when we didn't necessarily have all of the vaccines available, or people had just had their first round of it. We need to get them back in school because virtual learning is causing mental health challenges.
Well, see,
we did have that conversation.
But see, my thing is, you know, Representative Omukunde, that's a discussion that they want to hang their hats on, but they don't want to discuss the poverty. They don't want to discuss those other things, and I don't know if I'm on the air or not. It sounds like I went off the air. They don't want to discuss those other things. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. That they don't want to discuss these other things that that are not just in short for the short term, like coronavirus was for 2 years. We're talking about generational things that produce mental health issues for generations of people. They don't want to talk about that.
Yeah, there is this big misnomer or this big statement that many people share that, oh, these new generations are just soft. They are not as tough as the older generations were, and they need to buck up. And some people will even say that mental health and things like depression, anxiety, et cetera, that ballooned during the pandemic are not even real things. And so it's people would rather choose to ignore things that are happening rather than to address them face on. And they imagine that if I ignore them and I pretend like they don't exist, then they really don't. And we all know that that's not the reality.
So,
and I think that people who live.
Go ahead.
I think that people who live in rural areas and people who live in urban areas actually have a lot more in common with one another than they actually realize. But we get like billionaire folks, wealthy folks that live on a lake somewhere that will tell you that they'll tell the rural people that those urban people down there in Milwaukee and Madison are the reason for your challenges. Or they'll tell the urban people that those rural people up there are getting all the services and they're the reasons for your challenges, instead of us coming together and realizing that we have more in common with one another. I have more in common with the Mrs. Warnock that lives in South Milwaukee that is struggling every day to get up and do what it is that she needs to do than I have with some out-of-touch billionaire somewhere who's telling me that we're the causes of each other's problems.
You know what, man? As, you know, an elderly person, the more I hear about the game that they call the game of politics. The more it's hard for me to keep my food down. Listen, we've got to go to a break. Can you hang on?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. Our state representative, Supreme Moro Mukunde, is on the line. 844-967-2789 is the number. We'll be right back.
Trying to stay legal. My daughter found Nemo. I found a new primo. Yeah, you know how we do. We do it for the people and the stars.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guess is State Representative Supreme Moro Mukunde. And Connor, there was a question that you had.
A question from Karina, who's a listener from Milwaukee, in a comment. She was basically saying that why aren't there any, because with doctors and children, they give physicals and they check up on their, and that's continuous throughout their entire life. But when it comes to mental health, a lot of these illnesses go undiagnosed for the longest time. And the only way that a lot of kids get diagnosed through the education system, but because of how school works, you know, the a lot of parents and teachers tend to find untrue signs of the issue and misdiagnose people. So her question, like, what is there anything in the works? Is there anything insofar as creating a system or some type of program for younger people when they're children to be analyzed, because a lot of it is predetermined and genetic. It isn't just all based in trauma responses. So
yeah, so that if that question is directed at me, I know a lot of physicians and nurses who are trying to make sure that we have the right and proper funding, like healthcare, et cetera, to do those kinds of screenings for young people. And because they want to do them, and they figure if they're doing everything else for them, like you said, they might as well do that if they can recognize certain behavioral patterns that may be shifting for young people. They can do that there as well. And I know also that there are some of my colleagues who are in that profession as well, and they are proposing such kinds of bills already.
Let me ask you something, brother. If
yes, sir,
is there enough money at the state level now that comes into the coffers to do a better job of addressing many of the myriad of problems that we know we have in this state? You know, you hear the candidate for governor, Tim Michaels, looking to issue in a flat tax that will tax 75% of the people even more, you know, while giving tax cuts to the top 3% of the state. That's always a major possibility. If Tim Michaels becomes the governor and Republicans control, you know, the legislature. My point is the resources that we presently have coming in at the state level, can we do a better job of distributing them to address these issues that impact people from across the state?
Can we?
Yes.
Sure. However, I think it's all about priority in who's in power. You can say, well, we don't have enough money to do X, Y, Z. What if you didn't do A, B, C, then maybe right. You could. We definitely have some resources if we can, you know, look at how are we distributing them, especially when we look at this $5.4 billion surplus that we have and how Governor Evers has tried to call a session and say, how are we going to spend these dollars? Let's plan to spend these dollars moving forward. And then you have other people who just want to hoard it. They want to hoard it. They want to lower lorded over people's heads, et cetera. I think that where there are also some mechanisms by which we need to change the way we do things. Like personally, I'd love us to look at how we deal with housing, and to look at how we deal with some of our elders having to pay the same rate of property taxes that they did when they were, now that they're retired, they're paying the same rates that they did when they were working. How do we fix it so that people can afford to live in the homes and in the community that they grew up in, and not have to be pushed out when new people come in? And there's a lot of different mechanisms, by the way, by which we could do these things. However, we'd have to change some law.
It's always been amazing to me that, and this is one of the reasons why I have a tough time with our government, and not just on the state level, but on the national level, and what the government can be to the people, it never gets a chance to be because of all the special interests that controls the people who are there. And so what I'm talking about is, you know, when we vote and every vote is the same, it's equal, should have the same value, whether it's the poorest person who works for $10 an hour in the city of Milwaukee or to somebody who works in Madison and makes $500 to $10,000 an hour. Based on what they say our nation is, there's supposed to be equality in both those people and both those votes because they're both supposedly citizens of the United States government. But that's fiction. We should be working towards fixing it and making equality the foundation of what our nation is. But it's almost as if that's an impossible dream. And for somebody to even mention that, they're looked at as a lunatic. But isn't that what this should be about?
Absolutely. And I think that it still is. I think that what you and Pastor Lewis were talking about before I got on is very key when you were talking about young people in the next generation. You said when you were 18 years old, you thought you were going to change the world. I thought the same thing. I still think the same thing, that I'm going to be a part of it. Or as Tupac stated, he said, I may not change the world, but I'll be able to spark the brain that does. And I think it's really important that when folks get out to vote, and it's important that they do turn out heavily, so that every vote matters and every voice counts, that they people realize that that is their introduction into the process. That's the first thing that you do. However, I would encourage people to be heavily involved in the process after that, because much of our politics is not just in election year. It's in those years in between, and it's in our communities and in our houses and in our families as well.
You got to run?
I got a little bit more time, but got a few more minutes.
Okay, so I'll let you go. And we'll certainly talk soon. Thank you very much for taking out the time.
Remember, this evening, 6 to 8 p.m., we're going to be at Centennial Hall talking about the city of Milwaukee's climate and energy plan. Go to my Facebook page, State Representative Supreme Moore Mukunde, or on Instagram at rep_SMO. And I'll see y'all at 6 tonight.
All right. Thank you very much. Got to go to a break. Be right back.
All right. Appreciate you.
You too.